The following program is a presentation of the FlyPod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
You are listening to Super Chat, the official school information podcast for Jackson Dell Community Schools. Thank you for listening in today. I am your host, Gary Puckett. And today, my guest is your superintendent, Sam Melton. This podcast is sponsored exclusively by Civista Bank, with Ripley County offices in Milan, Versailles, and Osgood. From personal to business banking, Civista has been helping generations of families and businesses achieve their financial goals for 138 years. Whether you choose to visit one of their nearby offices or bank on the go with the Civista mobile app, you can be confident they are looking out for you. Follow them on Facebook, and to learn even more, visit their website, civista.bank. Member FDIC, that's Civista Bank, focused on you. Our nationwide media network operates with a team of 35 individual show hosts around the country. We also have 80 syndication partners and 17 different media domain platforms. We furnish on-demand programming for over 3,300 communities across the nation. We offer the Super Chat show format for schools around the country. However, this edition of Super Chat is produced solely for the benefit of the stakeholders of Jackson Dell Schools. Sam, welcome back to Super Chat.
Well, thank you, Gary. It's a pleasure to be on.
Always. I do enjoy our conversations. Well, Sam, I'd like to chat with you about the system of school funding to start our conversation today. I'd like to ask if you would explain how student enrollment directly impacts the amount of funding dollars your school corporation receives. Tell me about this direct connection.
To make it as simple as possible, we receive dollars from the state per student based on our enrollment. We actually just had our enrollment date on October 2nd. And for example, Jackson Dell was at 781 students. That's K to 12. So we receive approximately $7,300 per student. So what makes that unique and difficult is that we're trying to project a budget that includes, you know, teacher salaries. That's the most common. Everyone thinks about teachers and how much they get paid. But you have benefits. You have the non-certified staff, which includes like your teaching assistants and secretaries, the cafeteria, maintenance, custodians, bus drivers, your central office staff, the administrators. There's a lot that goes into trying to figure out, okay, how much dollars are we going to receive from the state as far as ADM and that student enrollment? And then what are we going to be able to do with it down the road?
Mm-hmm. And I think it's fair to point out that as with most school corporations around the state and beyond other borders as well in other states, about 85% of your budget is salaries and benefits, right?
That's going to be pretty close when you look at the overall. In fact, Indiana just passed a new law that went into effect July 1. That we have to provide out of the education fund, and there's a couple funds that we can talk about in a minute, but the education fund is we have to provide 62% of that fund has to go to teacher salary and benefits. So that's, we have to really look at, okay, not just the salaries, but we pay approximately almost 19% extra for teacher retirement, Social Security, little extra retirement funds there. So you have to look at that part of it. We also have local agreements with like the Career Center or the Rod Special Ed Co-op that we pay for those services as well. So you have to take all those dollars and figure out, okay, am I reaching that new law of 62% just out of the education fund, and that's just for teachers?
Sure. You know, there's one other thing I wanted to ask you related to this ADM count, which was, I believe, October 1st. Do they also come back into the school year, I don't know, like maybe February, March, or something like that, and ask you for an updated count? And if so, does that impact the dollars you will receive per student?
They do. And actually, they've changed this over the years, where it used to be you would get one count per year. Now we do two counts per year, and we do one on February. Usually it's the 1st of February. And they will take a look at the enrollment again and say, okay, maybe you've gained students, maybe you've lost students, and they will either add money or take away money based on that February count. So that fluctuation in enrollment is really critical. For example, as we start the year, if you're looking at Jacksonville, 25 students, if we were to lose 25 students, that's over $180,000 loss for the district. And those are the fears of a superintendent trying to create a budget to come up with all the things we have to pay for. And I mentioned salaries. We haven't even gotten into, you know, supplies and paper and electric and gas for the buses and things like that, that we need to try and project out. And if you lose students, which a lot of districts around here are doing, that can really affect the plans for the future.
Mm-hmm. Well, and with teacher contracts, especially being annual contracts, I mean, if February is an off figure and you lose funding, you still have a contract to fulfill on the part of all your teachers. So those fixed costs are still in place and they have to be paid. So, you know, it's a balancing act, delicate dance, as they say.
No, absolutely. And those are the things we're actually working with the teachers right now on bargaining, and we hope to get it finished up this week. But we're looking at maybe a 2-year contract, and we can do that when it's a budget year for the state. We can do a 2-year contract. But those are the fears. I'm trying to project into the future and look at possible enrollment fluctuations and take that into effect when it comes to, okay, I can offer this amount this year and also do something for next year and not get us into a bind if we happen to lose, you know, 25, 30 students.
Mm-hmm. Give our listeners a breakdown of the various funds that you do have, which are like silos, if you will, of money that need to be kept separate. Sometimes you can have interfund transfers, but that's a delicate process in itself. But the Indiana public education system does have you maintaining various funds. Explain how those work and what they're used for.
Yeah. So we have there's a few different funds, but two major funds. You have an education fund and you have an operations fund. And so the education fund is that money that's going to come from student enrollment. The operations fund is coming from those tax dollars collected from, you know, property taxes, things like that in your district. So when it comes to salaries, so teachers, anybody in the classroom, anyone in the buildings, so your teachers, your non-certified staff who are working with students, your administrators, those salaries come out of the education fund. You also have to pay for your paper, supplies, things like that. I don't want to call it a controversy, but another law that was changed this year is where books were free for parents and students. So, which is great, and I think it's something that we needed to do. But what the state has done is says we're going to give you so much money per student. Well, what we found out is they're not giving us enough to cover all of the book fees that we had. So if we have let's say $10,000-$15,000 that we didn't get covered by the state, we have to then pick that up through the education fund. So that part of it is pretty complicated. The operations fund is where you're looking at your expenses for maintenance. You can pay salaries like central office, those salaries, because it's a district-wide thing, can come out of operations, your transportation, your maintenance crew, your cafeteria. They have their own kind of account there that with a cafeteria fund, but all those things that you look at with operations, you have to then budget that as well. And I know you mentioned looking at a transfer of money. We can actually take 15% of the education fund and move it to operations. That's the most we could possibly do, but you can't take operations money and move it over to education. So it gets really complicated on how you can move that money around and make things work.
Sure. Do you also, in addition to those two funds, have a bus replacement fund or a rainy day fund?
Yes, and we do have a bus replacement fund. That is just to keep our bus fleet. We will up to date and things, and we'll try and take a look at what buses are needed and replaced. So as we're looking at like bus replacement and those how does our fleet look? And, you know, do we need to replace maybe a minibus or one of our full-size buses? The Rainy Day Fund is a fund that we can take up to 10% of, if we have a cash balance, for example, we have a little extra money, we can put it over there to give us some flexibility on maybe plans down the road as far as, oh, we want to do some kind of project, like we want to build a bus barn. And so we can maybe save some money, that think of as a savings account that we can take and put some money in there for 4 or 5 years and then use that down the road to build, you know, a bus barn or something like that that we want to do.
Mm-hmm. This is a little off topic, but somewhat related to the bus replacement fund. You are required to have each bus inspected annually, but once they reach a certain year of service, a certain number of years, I should say, does not that inspection requirement like increase?
It does. And with Jacksonville, we are very fortunate. Our bus fleet's pretty new. We do a good job of replacing buses as they do age and as the inspections go on. But yes, when it comes to inspections, when it comes to the bus age, there are things that it gets a little more difficult to keep those on the roads. It's always about student safety, so we're trying to keep the buses as in great a shape as possible and keep those new and running. And there's a lot of rules that go into that.
Mm-hmm. If I were to ask you what the biggest factors are that impact funding, either negatively or positively, what are those biggest factors you face?
The biggest factor is student enrollment by far. And those are the things that can really either, you know, give you that extra money that you didn't, you know, maybe anticipate, so you can do some things, or if you lose students, it can really have an impact on maybe what those future plans look like. And really that's the raises and keeping competitive with other districts. And that's what makes this a tough job, in that a lot of districts around Southeast Indiana are losing students. But the ones, and you look at the ones close to the interstates, a little more accessible, that are gaining students, they have an advantage when it comes to being able to provide maybe the salary increases or benefits for the teachers and non-certified staff, and just to make things a little bit easier for them. So enrollment's the biggest.
Okay. All right. So annually, you and your board and your fiscal staff will put their heads together and create a new budget. What month are you required to submit that budget to the state for their approval?
So we just actually did that. We have two different votes, two different board meetings where we'll go through the budget. And we finalized that in October. So our budget is now set for this school year. Like I said, my treasurer, myself, we go over this with our board members, and we talk about just the different things we have coming up, what it looks like as far as salary, benefits, things like that, but also maybe plans that we have if we have a capital project that we're trying to work on. And this is where the bonding comes in. We're actually working on some bonding for some projects, and that can help us alleviate some of the money that we need out of the operations fund. But it's always planning that part of it. If you have for example, if a chiller breaks down at one of the buildings, you're looking at, you know, a several hundred thousand dollar potential cost there. So it's always trying to plan ahead on what do we have, what do we need, trying to foresee any kind of major impacts that we could have, and planning all that out.
Well, let me shift gears on you a little bit, because I wanted to ask you, identify and describe any potential projects in the school district's future and how bonds play a part possibly into the funding of these projects.
No, absolutely. And we do have some bonds, like I mentioned before, that we're working on for capital improvements within the elementary and the junior senior high school. What happens there is, if we can collect a little more tax money to be able to fund some of these repairs and replacements and upgrades that we need, that's going to allow us to potentially save a little bit of that operations fund for other things down the road, and to really plan. You'll see districts right now that are doing capital projects that didn't have to raise taxes. Well, they're able to do that because they can, before that debt falls off, they're able to recapture that money and to be able to use that for for upgrades and things that they need. We're just not in that position to be able to do that right now. So we're trying to get ourselves planned for not just now and some upgrades, but for, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, that we can start to sustain things and be able to not have to reach out to the taxpayers to say, hey, you know, we need more money to be able to make this work. And that's just planning to make the best decisions possible.
Are there any specific projects on the burner at this time, or is it more or less a planning for the future in that regard, as you just described?
Well, we have a lot of, with the bonding we have coming up, we have projects that include chiller replacements at the high school gymnasium, a high school roof replacement. We have some drainage issues at the elementary that include redoing the parking lots completely, some safety issues. So there's quite a few projects that we have in place, but then this will allow us to then be able to say, okay, in 5, 7, 8 years, we may have a little bit of debt coming off where I can capture that with some other bonding. It doesn't raise taxes, but allows me to then plan for, oh, we're going to need a boiler replacement in 10 years. So I can start to look at those things down the road. And then I mentioned before that we're able to transfer 15% of education money into operations. If I can get these things done, that will allow me not to have to move so much money, which then gives more money to teachers and non-certified staff. And it's kind of a trickle-down effect to hopefully help everyone out.
Yeah. Well, this is a very interesting conversation we've had today. And Sam, I think you've provided our listeners with a good framework of understanding related to your school district's funding system and all the challenges presented in budgeting and ultimately funding your operations. Good job. I want to thank you for coming on the show today and sharing this information here on Super Chat.
Well, Gary, I appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to be on.
Listeners, this program is a good one to share with your school-connected friends. We thank our sponsor, Civista Bank, for supporting this monthly program. You can follow Civista on social media, and I suggest that you check out their mobile banking app, and to learn even more, visit their website, civista.bank. And the very next time you are in your local Civista branch location, let them know just how much you appreciate their support of Super Chat for Jacksonville Schools. If you come up with a comment or a specific question for us right here in Studio Number 7, share it with us. Email us, shout@theflypod.com. So for Jacksonville Community Schools and the Flypod Media Network, I have been your host, Gary Puckett. And our monthly program comes to you year-round on your portable media device or computer. Thank you for joining us today here on Super Chat, the official school information podcast for Jacksonville Community Schools.